Most estimates say that a college-educated speaker's receptive vocabulary is somewhere between 20 and 50,000 words. Okay, so you're going to see that's a much smaller number than sort of the average dictionary, which means that you can do something like open up a dictionary and see how many words you don't know. And I did exactly that using a Merriam-Webster's, and I found a lot I didn't know. I ended up, as I opened randomly, to the M page, and I discovered these words. Muscarine, a toxic ammonium base. Muon, an unstable lepton that is common in the cosmic radiation near the Earth's surface. Muntjac, any of a genus of small deer in southeastern Asia. And muntin, a strip separating panes of glass in a sash. And I have to say, I didn't know any of those words. And then there was another word, murmurous, which is characterized by murmurs, which I recognized, but I'm not sure that I've ever used. So there you see, and this is something that you can try yourself, that you open up a dictionary and see what words you don't know. And you'll notice, I think, one of the things that's useful to differentiate is the difference between your active vocabulary and your passive vocabulary. That your active vocabulary is the words you actually use on a regular basis or at all, and your passive or receptive vocabulary are the words that you recognize. So something like murmurous for me is probably more in my passive vocabulary, certainly a word that I can read and know, but not a word that I use every day. So that starts to address the question of how big the lexicon is. Now let's talk about what counts as English. I mentioned the issue of scientific vocabulary, which is arguably the most rapidly growing part of the lexicon. Some people say that there are at least 200,000 medical terms. And then, for example, there are all the names we have for chemical compounds. So if you put all those in the English lexicon, the lexicon gets big really fast. But many of us don't control that vocabulary. Dictionaries, in fact, are filled with highly specialized items, some of them borrowed, some of them not. And a useful distinction there may be between the core of the vocabulary and then the periphery. And the periphery are these highly specialized terms that if you're in a particular field, you may know those terms. But even in the core, it is remarkable how much borrowing there is. And it reflects the history of the language. That some people say that if you take the most common 1,000 words in English, over 80% of them are native Germanic words. Okay? But if you go to the next most common 1,000 words, over 60% of those are borrowed. Over 60%. That is really an incredible number for how many words English has taken in from other languages. You may also be thinking, well, then when does a borrowed word become English? We could take an example like sushi. I think we'd all agree that that feels pretty English now. What would you say about the word hamachi for yellowtail? Does that feel English to you? It's in the OED. They've decided to put it in. You could question or support that decision. It's also important to realize that as English spreads around the world, it's developing new varieties, many of which have words specific to that region. So for example, in Singaporean English, you have the Malay word makan, which means to eat. And you see this happening all around the world, the same way that American English, when it was developing, was borrowing words from the Native American languages that it encountered, such as moose and squash. In this course, we'll focus mostly on the long-established varieties of English, obviously particularly British English, American English, Canadian and Australian English, but we're also going to spend time talking about the many varieties of English that together make up what we would call the English language. And it's important to remember that this includes standard varieties and non-standard varieties. That it's not that standard English is English. Standard English is one part of English. As linguist John McWhorter has said, what a language is really a bundle of dialects, and so what fits under English is all the many varieties of English, both standard and non-standard. So in thinking about the lives of words and how they work and where they came from, we'll be thinking about the past, the present, and the future of English and of its speakers. Through words, we'll have a chance to talk about history and culture, about the systematicity of language and the irregularity of language, and the wonders of the creative human brain. In this lecture, I've introduced several key themes that we'll be returning to, including the mixed or borrowed bag of English words, the fundamental power of words, the ever-changing nature of language and the words in it, and the way that studying words can challenge some fundamental assumptions about how language works. In the next lecture, we're going to be turning to this question of what a word is. After all, if we're going to talk about questions such as how big the English vocabulary is, we should come to some kind of agreement about what counts as a word. You may have been thinking when I said that the prefix e was voted as word of the year, is that a word? So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the lifespan of a word. So let me leave you with two questions to think about for the next lecture. One, when is a word born? And two, when does it die?